Thank you very much, and I'm really pleased to be back in Padova. And I have to say that the question is not what could Brussels teach to Padova, but the question is to know what can Brussels learn from Padova. And this is the essence, because the European Union is not about the 2 square kilometers Brussels or the 1 square kilometer Strasbourg, but it is about the 500 million citizens all over Europe. So first of all, I would like to warmly thank, may I say in the meantime, my dear friends, Professor Papiska, Professor Mascia and Professor Bekemans, for inviting me for the 6th year in a row to deliver the Jean Monnet lecture at this great University of Padova in honor of you. Successfully passed the exam of the course Union Challenges in the Process of Globalization. So after 5 years discussion, the vertex of multi-level and multi-actor based European Union, one would believe that I have finally convinced every single one of you. But no, it must be that there is at least one professor that still needs to be converted to the art of multi-level governance. It is, of course, due to the merits of the principle of multi-level governance that I am standing here today. It is my sincere conviction that the European Union, after 5 years' economic downturn, needs more than ever a governance model based on partnership, cooperation, and mutual respect. And essentially linked to human rights is respect for each person, whatever his or her capacities may be. And being a politician who has had the opportunity to govern at the regional, national, and currently the European level, I've learned that a lot of negative energy is geared towards preserving vested interests due to narrowly unilateral and sectoral fragmented thinking. This necessarily results in a complex governance model in which duplications and overlap are legio. Competences are dispersed at multiple layers, and policy actions and investments are ineffective due to antagonism between political leaders. Eventually, it are the citizens that are the first victims of this system of often non-governance, or worse, of bad governance, even malgoverno. So the question is to know, is this a plea for a monolithic, centralized, top-down governance system, or am I advocating rigid respect of the subsidiarity principle, calling for a catalogue of competences and a clear Kompetenzabgrenzung for every single layer of governance in the Union? Of course, dear students, the answer is 2 times no. Both systems are certainly interesting for political scientists, economists and legal theorists to study, but they do not reflect Europe's history, its rich governance traditions and varied institutional landscape. Throughout history, we have always witnessed trends of centralization versus devolution and or decentralization. The era of Emperor Charles in the 16th century was already characterized by this antagonism. One could see it as a full centralized empire, another as even a kind of prefiguration of the Europe of today. In Europe, cities have always enjoyed important autonomy. This was certainly the case within Italy. Many cities fought each other for decades, and we have just to remind the old ancient history, Sparta versus Athens. But in the same time, eventually many teamed up or formed an alliance. And let's think on the Hansa, the Hanseatic League of merchant cities ranging from the North Sea until the Baltic Sea. Today, many European cities and certainly capital cities still enjoy an important degree of financial and legislative autonomy. Yet, for reasons of so-called efficient administrative territorial management, and I sometimes doubt on their relevance, provinces have been installed as a level above the communes in many European countries. And I know that is one of the discussions you have to face in Italy as well at this very time. Gradually, we have seen nations evolving towards full-fledged independent states or towards constitutional regions with important legislative and fiscal powers. Some cooperate under the umbrella of a federal or quasi-federal system constituting a new state. And whereas meanwhile some former countries have been broken up, resulting in new sovereign states recognized under international law. And of course, we mustn't forget that at the macro level, many of today's Union's member states have been part of one or more successive empires. It suffices to refer to the Greek city-states confederation, the Greek Roman Empire uniting the Mare Nostrum, the Byzantium and late Ottoman empires in the east, or the North Sea Empire in the north, or the Holy Roman Empire and the Hungarian-Austrian in the heart of Europe. Of course, the influence of the Roman and Orthodox Catholic Church or European historical figures such as Charlemagne, even Napoleon in another way, but also humanists as Erasmus or fighters for better faith as Luther have all resulted in the true essence of Europe. It is the continent intrinsically linked to be united in diversity. United in diversity. Diverse in unity. Moreover, Europe has gradually embraced what we call today the Rhineland model as a system of governance based on dialogue and negotiations with the recognized social partners. But even today, also in our country and in neighboring countries, this model is even questioned, and reflection is going on if we don't need more tailor-made approaches better fitting with the reality of some areas in different places of Europe. And just as an example, I may give the Low Countries model discussed between the Netherlands and Flanders today. But anyway, over time, also civil society has become better organized and taken up its place in the policy cycle. Finally, member states' constitutions protect individual citizens from excessive government influence. As we all know, citizens can challenge laws before a mediator or ombudsman, and eventually request an annulment before court in case fundamental rights have been neglected or fundamental principles of good governance have not been respected. And moreover, through petitions and mobilizing press and social media, if not to say to you, citizens can genuinely influence policy making in Europe. Someone was saying that the Arab Spring was only possible due to social media. The question is, if it is possible to build up democracy just by the tool of social media at this very time. So the European Citizens Initiative is at this time the last step in this evolution, giving the possibility to citizens to make legislative proposals to the European Commission as long as they are sustained by 1 million citizens coming from 7 member countries. It is therefore not surprising that the governance model of the European Union itself has characteristics that comply with all these features of a representative democracy organized at various interconnected layers of governance. No wonder that there is often reference to the Union as a never-ending consensus-building entity in perpetuum. I do believe that there is an easygoing way to think that all what is done at this very moment is too little or too late. It's never too little or too late to build up better qualitative democracy. On the contrary, let's look at the tackling of the sovereign debt crisis in our Eurozone. First, a comprehensive framework has been set up to ensure economic and budgetary coordination at Union level during the European semester process. Second, through the European Stability Mechanism, we may say that a firewall has been established for Eurozone members. And third, Union rules on banking supervision have been established, and further negotiations on the completion of the European Monetary Union are ongoing. The latter to include proposals to strengthen democracy and accountability at Union level. And rightfully, in the four presidents' report on the EMU completion, this point is earmarked as an essential pillar in case more powers would be pooled at Union level. But the Union can't achieve its dream when it looks just as an accounting system. And there has to be a new perspective for more growth and jobs, as it was the focus when the single market was initiated already in 1992, and the social dimension of the Union has to be improved. And let's be honest. The Lisbon Strategy of 2000 failed largely, and there is a real risk that the same would happen with the Europe 2020 strategy. And I'm really concerned about some evolutions in the democratic construction of the Union. Where the function of a permanent president of the Council created by the Lisbon Treaty was a good idea in say, the risk may be that it leads to an excessive intergovernmental approach, unbalancing the equilibrium with the European Parliament and enhancing the role of national parliaments as the only protectors of the subsidiarity principle. Limiting European democracy and stopping devolution to the national capitals is neglecting the essential role of regions, cities, social partners, all people involved in our modern society as pillars for reasonable democracy. La démocratie raisonnable. And that's the reason why we have to reflect on improved legitimation of the leaders of Europe. It makes no sense that the President of the European Council is just designed as a kind of subcontractor by the heads of government of the member states. So one day we have to see in which way there can be not just more legitimation, but even an election of the European president. And not just to counterbalancing, But the European Parliament, when we overlook the last 55 years, starting with the European Community and today, has a great role to play, but it is a real paradox that the circumscription, the electoral circumscriptions, are in fact region by region, state by state. So I'm absolutely in favor to go for a direct election, at least for half of the members of the parliament, all over all countries, member states of Europe. And the real meaning of improved legitimation is that partnership between all responsible actors is essential for our common future. And that it's about dialogue. And I prefer even conversation. For me, Europe is about conversation. And conversation is a stronger by nature idea than just dialogue. Because dialogue, even in essence, it is about the common sense. It is the position between the one and the other. A conversation is about the equal setting and sitting of people around the same and in the same era. It is also precisely in this context that the Committee of the Regions of the European Union must seize the momentum to put its proposals on the table for strengthening both multi-level and multi-actor governance. As I am always saying, the two main dimensions of the subsidiarity principle. The vertical one, multi-leveled, between all levels of governance and even more responsibility, and the horizontal one, not just the link, but the appropriate co-responsibility of the actors in our society. So this double dimension has to be matched, and this would lead to better governance and to better quality of our democracy. Today, of the 27 member states, 3 have, as we all know, a federal system, 5 have strong federal elements, and in general, all member states have developed a form of internal decentralization devolution system. Both partnership and subsidiarity, and also, let's not forget, the other important principle of proportionality. And proportionality means that everyone is proportionally responsible for things going on the ground level in his or her city, in the surroundings. So, partnership, subsidiarity and proportionality are key principles, crucial elements for constructing the strong political union we need. And as I explained, the development of multi-level governance is essential in the process of further integration. And it may not sound as a surprise to you that this very University of Padova was also the first European university to develop a Jean Monnet Center of Excellence on intercultural dialogue, human rights and multi-level governance, because all terms are interlinked. And as I explained last year, the key question is to know how we can generate a European public sphere without opening the so-called box of Pandora. And the challenge is to provide for a system of what we may call innovative interest representation, in which people feel represented on an equal basis in their various identities. And this can be done through the emergence of an intelligent, a smart multi-level governance system in the Union. Its full deployment would not require formal change in the European legislation, because I'm always saying that the approach, the principle of multi-level governance, multi-actorship, is a functional approach. How mechanisms may function in, as it was said before, a rather complex situation we are living in. And in the Committee of the Regions, we are convinced that both the restructuring of our economies and the creation of jobs and growth must happen in partnership between at least institutions, but not solely. With member states, regions, cities, socio-economic partners, civil society platforms, and for this good reason, policy coordination, budget synchronization, and a shared commitment towards the joint implementation of the Europe 2020 strategy for growth and jobs are a top priority. We cannot fail. And the reform agenda can only be achieved when we work together, because this is the essence of partnership, to work together, not in a splendid intellectual, practical, political isolation. All policymakers, socio-economic partners, and civil society platforms should share the same policy agenda. And there is a difference between the policy agenda and the political agenda. And this is precisely what multi-level governance tries to do. It ensures that all these actors work together, not against each other. Multi-level governance does not question the state's authorities, but on the contrary, tries to improve the mechanism, the function, the co-responsibility of everyone. So it strengthens, or it has to strengthen, openness, participation, coordination, and commitment. And it allows us to take account of the real territorial diversity in Europe. And due to globalization and social informatization, people identify with various groups and territorial levels. It has to be formatted one day in what we may call a European Code on Participatory Administrative Procedures. We have a lot of codes, Code of Good Neighborship, a code of on political parties and so on, but I think that European Code on Participatory Procedures and Processes is needed. And the concept of multi-level governance is going its way even in other fields, and in fields where at first view it was not evidently expected. I was really impressed by the intervention of Professor Andreas Voskühle, the president of the Bundesverfassungsgericht, the Federal Constitutional Court of Germany, last 8th of March in the Venice Commission, where he developed, I may say surprisingly for some people around the table, he developed the idea that multi-level cooperation of European constitutional courts is not just a keystone, but a real pillar for the protection of human rights. Of course, the New Citizens Initiative would be also part of this Union Code as one of the participative instruments and methods allowing for greater involvement, dialogue, conversation, responsiveness, and effective policy making. Furthermore, the European Code must provide all procedures necessary to operationalize all principles enshrined in the future European Charter on Multilevel Governance. In my view, this European Charter would be open for signature to all public authorities in Europe that wish to respect its key principles. The latter authorities would thus receive, may I say, a kind of logo recognized by the Union. Let's remind the way we defined multi-level governance in our white paper. And I quote just one sentence. It's about the coordinated action by the European Union, the member states, regional and local authorities, based on partnership and aimed at drawing up and implementing union policies in a better democratic way, unquote. And the Charter on Multilevel Governance has to take into consideration the interplay between institutions and policy organizations and associations. And according to two scoreboards for monitoring multi-level governance in 8 policy fields, and it's about the Europe 2020 strategy, the Energy Strategy 2020, the Stockholm Program, the Spring Package, the Single Market Act, the European Neighbourhood Policy, the Structural Funds Regulation and the Common Agricultural Policy, we may notice that multi-level governance is already partly in practice. But the real challenge is to make it evolve from, may I say, a kind of an expert concept and put it into practice at a larger scale. In other words, to improve its policy concept and to offer it, and it can be a little bit surprisingly to use this word, and to offer it as a service to all institutional partners and actors. So, what principles could thus constitute the main building blocks of the Charter on Multilevel Governance in Europe? First, there are 7 holy number, 7 guiding principles, 5 principles of good governance, and 6 good administrative practices. The 7 guiding principles are about, as I said before, the respect of the subsidiarity and proportionality principles in both policy making and implementation. The development of horizontal and vertical partnerships through contractual arrangements or cooperation agreements. Because it's not just enough to be around the table and say, let's work together. So we have to reflect on the idea of contractualization. And this idea was also part of the group of wise persons looking to the Europe of 2030. So I think we have to go beyond the common setting, but going to contractual arrangements. Also, commitment towards enhanced interinstitutional and administrative cooperation, equal treatment amongst all institutional actors, respect for the principle of mutuality and loyalty, the encouragement of active citizenship, and the commitment towards multi-level fundamental rights protection. This is essential for, and I quote Professor Papiska, for the nova civitas we have to build up. In addition, public entities should subscribe to the 5 principles of good governance as identified by the European Commission already in 2001 in its white paper. But surprisingly, the European Commission was never implementing this white paper in practice. And there we have to speak about responsibility, openness, transparency, effectiveness, participation, and policy coherence. And finally, in my view, public entities that would adhere to the Charter should also subscribe to the following 6 good administrative practices. All these practices have been identified in the core scoreboard on the monitoring of multi-level governance at European level. And it means to provide timely information, dialogue and consultation practices, assure sound and timely stakeholder involvement, provide for a motivated response to stakeholders' observation, not just use it for the Chinese classement, cultivate territorial integrated place-based policy making, respect for the Union's smart regulation agenda, the so-called impact assessment, and put forward innovative instruments for implementing joint policy objectives in partnership, such as territorial pacts and, in a broader sense, European trans-border configurations, as it is the case for EGTCs. Dear friends, how important it may be to come to a consensus on the final text. I believe it should be a charter of and for the 21st century, may I say, a kind of charter of a new generation, focusing on usages, involving stakeholders and users by high-level interactive ateliers, interviews, and even experimentation labs, meaning that it has to be a living document. What we don't need is another text we can hang on the wall of the city town hall. We have to avoid what is often the case with formal charters, and I can refer to the Charter of Local Democracy, where it took 22 years to go for the ratification of it, and in the meantime, there is already discussion of more than 15 years about the Charter on Regional Democracy. So I think that we have to be innovative and avoid these constraints of formal ratification. One day it could be the outcome. So the text can only be effective if it is short, accessible, explicit, concrete, simple, citizens-oriented, and can be widely used and appropriated. The text should be easy to download, and all institutions that signed up to the text should be given the possibility to learn from each other. Apps, and I have not to explain to you what apps are, should be developed, bringing together different groups of users to steer the discussions, be it politicians, academics, policy experts, or civil society. I'm just coming back in my other capacity as president of the Flanders Belgium Broadcasting Company from California. And I seized the new era where you, more than we, are living in. So our point has to be that we have to use the best, the better tools to make the bridge between the context of democracy and to link it to your daily life. And so I think that as a kind of another paradox, that a charter has to be imagined as a mobile one, because we know in the meantime that the evolution of the captation of information by the mobile way is not just growing, but takes already about 25% of all people being between 18 and 24 years old. So this is what we may, not diluting the content, not, may I say, going away from the essence of the principles, but we have to use other tools, better tools, and in this way, not just for the fun, not just for the gamification, the gaming industry, but let's say for the citizens' approach. So, online platform of service with online applications to support multi-level governance should bring institutions together, breaking through administrative walls that separate them for cooperating together. Concrete success. Success stories, so-called storytelling. Wonderful word, storytelling. What is the story of the citizens? Based on case stories, should demonstrate the potential of multi-level governance for changing the sometimes, may I say, consolidate ways policy has been conducted in the past, with local stakeholders seeking for help and solutions to overcome governance bottlenecks organized in discussion groups and annual multi-level governance fora. Initiating processes of exchange of experiences on real cases, not just on theory. And beyond formal signature, going towards a local transposition process step by step. And I don't have to explain to you, to this audience, that it is only when universities, business and public institutions work together that innovation can be spurred and new products can be, in fact, put in place. This is may I say, a kind of triple helix concept, leading to more jobs and growth. So multi-level governance connects institutions and people. Of course, inspiring role models are needed. It's always the same in society. We are searching for the reference, for persons where we say, this is what has to happen. So there are also digital platforms of services can help institutions share information and better communicate with their citizens. And in fact, this is exactly what the smart cities do. Multi-level governance must also incite to greater policy experimentation and what we may call institutional discovery. Institutions should test new procedures for catering greater synergies and cooperation resulting in win-win situations. Institutions must discover each other, complement and build on each other's strengths. And of course, flexibility is also required. Each institution has its own governance culture, and that's a good thing. It is through this discovery process that institutions can decide to develop a joint action plan for multi-level governance. Obviously, this must not result in new procedures without doing away with cumbersome and complex old administrative routine. Both the Union member states should promote the Charter by pointing at coordination bottlenecks and identifying real potential for cooperation. Through the structural funds, it can also incite institutional capacity building, providing institutions with the necessary assistance and expertise. And obviously, a culture of multi-level governance can only be developed if universities and schools educate students on the principle, provide for multi-level governance trainings and practices. So, when in place, member states and regions could also task their ombudsman to facilitate cooperation, whilst promoting transparency and mediating when administrative bottlenecks hinder cooperation. At city level, a local multi-level governance contact point could be installed as a single point of entrance for NGOs, civil society, business community, and public authorities. These experts could connect societal partners and spur interinstitutional cooperation. It would be interesting also to make a kind of evolving map to be put in place, giving also visibility on signatories, on the labeling process, and on progress in the field as a tool for disseminating and implementing the Charter on Multi-Level Governance. One out of the questions is, what about the signing up to the Charter itself? It should be, in my view, in our view, an easy process, preferably via internet. Participating entities should have access to a European online platform where good multi-level governance practices are exchanged. The process, evidently, has to be inclusive, transparent, simple and attractive in its access, enabling the signatories to show their engagement. There is also where we are thinking about, and it is not evident to go this way, a kind of collaborative dimension of the process aiming for a participative and even a co-construction charter, co-writing its content, product of emulation, simulation, and stimulation. In view to reach the objective, of a vivid, a tangible and future-oriented charter, a convergence of views on form and content has evidently to be developed. And there are, summarizing, 10 emerging requirements. First, the articulation of clear objectives. Second, a multi-level document for the multi-level governance charter. Third, a multiple entries charter. Four, support to explain multi-level governance. Five, a label to give visibility. Six, a map of Europe showing progressive adhesion. Seven, a progressive transposition process. Eight, reporting obstacles and difficulties. Nine, clarification in terms of benefits for all citizens. And 10, the charter as an entry point for multi-level governance services. Dear professors, dear students, I conclude and hope I have provided you with some food for thought. Multi-level governance is the way forward to a more involved and accountable political union. So I was really teased by the information I got yesterday that you are working, Professor Maschia and others, on the universities of and for Europe for a political union. So it is important that the academia, that the students, that you all together are focusing on this point. The education you enjoyed here at the University of Padova provides you with an excellent academic background. It is not to please the professors nor you, to help building a European public sphere. It is your responsibility to be critical, to look up coming the future, to give your state of play, to give your opinion and to do it publicly. Be it in your future professional environment or via the many social blogs and media on which you are certainly very active. The important issue here is to debate European policies. In a world which has become interdependent, public authorities, together with socio-economic and civil society actors at all levels of governance, have to seize opportunities together. And in my view, we have now a real window of opportunity to make the case for a connected European Union, both horizontally and vertically, in order to make the citizens' Europe a reality. And this is our belief. A political union committed to work together with its citizens, through its regions and cities, and its living European civil society. And I finally sincerely hope that for the occasion of the Committee of the Regions' 20th birthday next year, a charter of multi-level governance could be proclaimed along the earlier developed lines. And not least, that the baptismal could be at this very place of this great University of Padova, paying tribute to you, your high distinguished and professors of the highest level, and especially also to Professor Leons Beekmans, who contributed also with endeavor to this project. All of them highly committed and engaged towards human rights and democracy. And the 3D dimension, the 3D challenge remains that we have to improve the delivery in democratic terms of our union to enhance democracy as the way to go for our common destiny. And everything is connected, may I say, sometimes to the sea of citizen, the sea of capacity and the sea of constructivity, because everything is about human capital, and human capital is the very essence and the base for social capital. as I'm always closing my lecture, costruiamo insieme Europa. Thank you much for your attention.